Ken Rapton, lovely to have you here on the podcast today, and I'm really looking forward to getting into this topic around meditation and how anyone can develop confidence in their capacity to meditate over time. So thanks a lot for dropping in.
My pleasure. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to this conversation.
So I guess for me, the starting point would be, what are the common misconceptions around meditation?
I think one of the main things that people struggle with at the beginning is they tell themselves that this is really difficult. In all the years that I've been teaching meditation, then almost the most common thing people say is it's really, really hard. You know, they sit down, they try to calm their minds, and lots of thoughts come up. And they get this sense that, well, I can't stop thinking. My mind is so busy. And almost everyone at the beginning of their meditation practice makes one common mistake, which is to try too hard. We try to exert this control over our mind so that we try to fight with the thoughts. And at the end of 10 minutes of doing that, people can be more exhausted and more stressed than they were before they started. So the key thing, I think, at the beginning with meditation is to realize, what is it exactly we're trying to do? And what we're really doing is transitioning from our normal busy state of doing and reacting to a deeper, peaceful state of being and experiencing. And it's not so much that we have to try really hard. Of course, there's a skill to it and there is some technique to it. But if we just relax, if we just enjoy the fact, I don't have to think about these things now. If we ring fence a little bit of time for ourselves, give ourselves permission to stop, and then whatever comes up, we just gently let it go. What we will discover underneath the noise is this beautiful stillness that all of us have inside. You know, at the core of our being, for everyone, there is this place of calm, this place of stillness that we can recharge ourselves in. And it's not really a question of trying to make something happen, because it's already there. It's just let the thoughts go. You know, one analogy is of an overcast sky. Like, the sun is still shining. The sun hasn't gone to some other galaxy. It's not AWOL. We just need the clouds to part. Let the thoughts subside. Just relax, let go. I don't need to think about this now. And then what we discover as those clouds part is this beautiful stillness that was always waiting for us.
So can you give some kind of insight from your own experience or your own kind of helping people with this over the years? How do they cut through the noise, and how do they connect to that peace, that stillness within the mind, which then becomes obviously over time the basis for them beginning to build their meditation practice?
You know, the instructions are so simple. Sit, breathe, don't do anything else. And people might be thinking, well, you know, I sit and breathe all day long. Nothing amazing happens. Why should something suddenly amazing happen because I've called it meditation time? And basically, it's about the patience. You know, when I was growing up, my father, who's an amazing inspiration to me in many, many ways, he was quite driven. He was a businessman. He worked very, very hard, but he was very good at boundaries. And so growing up, Sunday afternoons, he'd be on the sofa watching the football, firmly in control of the remotes. We'd bring him food and snacks. And sometimes, you know, he'd have an office in the house with a work phone, and sometimes it would ring. And I think some people in that situation might kind of get frustrated or annoyed. You know, what do they want? Blood? They're trying to kill me. I've been working all day. And he wouldn't do that. He would listen to it ring. He would listen to it ring with almost a slightly gleeful smile, because that was the sound of the ringing phone that he wasn't going to answer. And some people might think, oh, opportunity only knocks once. You know, he's missing out on chance. But he was just really good at boundaries. And so that phone would ring. He'd hear it ringing with this little gleeful smile. And then finally, whoever was at the other end would give up and it would ring out. And he'd just enjoy that moment. And I think there's something really key in meditation where the thoughts are coming. Now, all day long, normally, it's like a monkey on our back saying, think this, do that, don't forget, do that. You've got to do this. And in a meditation, we turn the tables on that busy mind and we say, no, this is my time. This is my time for peace. I don't have to decide anything. I don't have to be in control of anything. I don't have to fix anything. I don't have to do anything. And the thoughts are going to come up. Of course they are. But when they come up, we just remind ourselves, not now. I'm closed for business. Not now. If it's an important thought, it'll come back later. And it won't happen immediately that those thoughts stop, but gradually, if we're patient with it, if we do this in a relaxed way, if we're not fighting with ourselves, with our thoughts, they will start to slow down. They'll be less insistent. And eventually this moment happens where there is this pause. There's this silence between the thoughts. And in that silence, we find a peace and an enjoyment that I don't think anything else gets close to. So I understand, of course, at the beginning, it is difficult. And at the beginning, sometimes we turn inwards and it seems like our mind is even more busy. But actually, that's just us becoming aware of the noise that's going on inside. Give it a little bit of time and gradually it'll just subside. It's all about relaxing, letting go, finding the enjoyment. I don't have to think about this now.
But then I guess the next point would be, okay, so that's fantastic. And then I sit and I turn in and it's crazy. What techniques can they use, you think, to begin to, you know, develop a confidence that you can calm this, you can settle the mind, and you can then begin to build the basis for a deeper meditation practice over time?
I mean, I do want to amplify that point that you just made, because I think it is so, so important. At the very beginning of a meditation, what's the very first thing we should do is basically watch the mind, observe the mind, check in with ourselves. Where am I at? Like, we can't go from just coming in from a busy day's work to just immediately jumping on a cushion and expecting our meditation is going to take off and go smoothly. Within the techniques of meditation, so there are many different types of meditation at the basic level. Mantras, simple visualizations. The most common one that we do is simple breathing meditation. And the instruction is sit, breathe, focus on the sensations of the breath, try not to follow any thoughts, try to let go of everything. And there's one point which I've personally found incredibly useful, and it might seem a little, I don't know, it might seem a little too obvious or too simple even, I don't know, to say, but for me it made a huge difference. The instructions is breathe naturally. And what I notice in myself is, because the only thing to do in this meditation is to sit and breathe, I would start to almost consciously involve myself in the process of breathing. So I'm drawing the air in and then I'm forcing the air out because I'm concentrating on breathing. But the instructions breathe naturally. And when we're breathing naturally, you know, when we're asleep, we're not forcing the air in, we're not pushing the air out. The breath just happens on its own. I'm just here to have an experience. And it's just time and patience. And then it does click. Like, it might not happen the first time or the first few times, but in a few weeks, this moment comes that's, wow, this works, I can do this.
But what is the consequence of that? If somebody's going through that process, what is it they're experiencing as they begin to settle the waves of busyness and distraction? And what are the insights they can extract from that result as they move through that practice? A simple breathing meditation we're talking about.
That's a great question. And I do think the gradual is a really important word there, because we sit and we... Personally, I like to take a little bit of time just to check in with where we're at. I like to get a sense of the room. I like to just gather myself, feel the sensations of my body. And then gradually, it's like getting more and more precise, feel the sensations of the breathing. And ideally arrive at a single point at the entrance to the nostrils and try to keep my mind at that one point throughout the whole of the in-breath and the whole of the out-breath. And so it is an exercise in concentration. Like, we are training our mind to hold at a single point, which takes a little bit of time to build up. But what will happen from that is an experience of single-pointedness begins to develop, which means that everything else starts to fade away. So we've gone inside, and we are losing ourself in the moment. All of the worries, all of the problems, all of the things in our life that are uncomfortable and difficult for a moment disappear for us. And then when we come out of that meditation, there is a calm, there's like a buffer. Things happen and we've got an extra moment to consider, how do I want to react to that? And our sense of who we are is changed. Even from, this is meditation 101, even from the first basic breathing meditation, our sense of who we are changes, because we tend to tell ourselves this story, I'm this stressed, busy, uncomfortable person. We dwell so much on our faults and flaws, exaggerating them. And this meditation gives us a different version of ourselves to relate to, this calm, this stillness, that is a much truer version of who we are, because that's what remains when the noise and the busyness subside. You know, Venerable Geshe-la, my teacher, Geshe Kelsang Gyatso Rinpoche, has this very beautiful expression: when the turbulence of distracting thoughts subside and the mind becomes still, a deep happiness and contentment naturally arises from within. And it is so beautiful to find that that's who we really are. A whole sense of self changes. We get a gentle, humble, calm confidence, because we know that inside of us is a stillness.
I guess one of the things would be really nice to explore with you as well. So somebody's getting some experience of that over time. But often what you get from people when you're talking to them is that they feel like at some point you hit this glass ceiling. So you go from the temporary peace of settling your mind and some insights coming from that into your potential to change. But how do we take it from there to becoming really a confident meditator and confident that we can really change at the deepest level?
I think we can understand our mind. If we think of our mind as like a jungle or a forest with many different pathways through it, some of those pathways take us to places we don't want to go. We may have been many, many times. We can sometimes know that we're on a train of thought and we know where it's taking us. I don't want to keep going back to these places. And yet there are other places that sometimes we've only been to occasionally. We think, I wish I could get there more often, or we've only read about or heard about. And so I think meditation is like taking a mental machete into the forest of our mind and clearing a path to the kind of places we want to go. And at the beginning, it's difficult. You know, that will be hard work to forge that path. We need to keep working at it regularly, daily or weekly or how often we can. And that old path might still have that pull, that kind of familiarity. It's easier, it feels, to keep going down that way. And we have to a little bit hold ourselves back. So there is an exercise of self-discipline and self-mastery. But give it time. And then the old path will disappear into the undergrowth as if it was never there. And the new path becomes as easy to traverse as the old path was. Our habit has changed.
And it's interesting because, and thanks for that, because I think what happens is we struggle when other people are struggling. So we see people struggling with various things. And normally when people are really struggling, like you're saying, they direct it towards basically whoever's in front of them, especially if in some way they feel that we've triggered that. And so I remember this in like a personal story myself, where somebody I was talking to and they're really feeling overwhelmed with a family member who seemed quite negative and quite toxic. And they just couldn't get to a place where they could basically be at peace with them. So they were trying to, or, you know, separating themselves more and more. Understandably, they were struggling with this family member going down that direction, felt they couldn't really deal with this, and then were getting quite negative about this person. And I remember at the time we were having this chat over a cup of coffee, and I said to them, well, the way to frame that, if it's going to be helpful in any way, is it's either a problem for you or a suffering for them. You choose. How, though?
What we utilize are skillful thoughts, and Buddha is a treasure of the most skillful thoughts. Amazing. And from one point of view, they're very simple, and we think, well, why didn't I think of that before? But sometimes we need someone to share it with us. So, for example, we start to relate to people's painful minds as a sickness that they're suffering from, not something that we blame them for. So when we're confronted by someone with an aggressive or unreasonable behavior, and of course, if we need to protect ourselves, we protect ourselves, and none of what I'm saying impedes our ability to set clear boundaries. We can actually do that much more effectively from a place of peace. But what we're realizing is, where is this coming from? Because in truth, it's not really usually about us. This is where they're at. They've been through something difficult. And I like to think, the process I like to ask myself is this the behavior of someone who is at peace with themselves? Like, is this an expression of a peaceful, happy mind? And clearly it's not. Like, we know from ourselves, when I behave like that, clearly that's because I'm stressed and agitated and so forth. And so this behavior is an expression of pain. Do they want to be in this pain? No, they don't. Have they chosen it? Clearly not. Our mind sometimes reacts saying, well, they should know better. But if they knew better, they wouldn't be in this space. This is someone whose nature, whose potential is peace and kindness and calm, who's fallen under the influence of these painful thoughts and feelings. And by virtue of the fact that they're directing this outwards, it's going to get reflected back and reinforce those painful thoughts. If I let my mind go through that process, in the end, there's only one response that makes any sense, which is compassion. Is there something I could do or not say, even removing myself from the situation, that would help this person find their peace? You know, if I was walking along, we're in Ulverston today, if I was walking along the streets of Ulverston, and as I passed someone, they smacked me in the face, and I think, who's that? Who hits a monk? Like, what is this? And I realize it's like an epileptic having a seizure, and they're spasming and they've collapsed to the ground. I'm not going to think, I'm going to give you a good kicking for having slapped me in the face. That would make no sense at all. The only thing that makes sense is, can I help? Is there something I can do? And if we think that through, we realize it's just a different framing in the mind. It's a different narrative. And if we get used to that in the safety and comfort of our meditation seat, we get used to thinking that narrative through, eventually we're able to reach it even in a conflict situation in life. Eventually it's there to hand immediately. Eventually that's just how we think. And then the person who thought, I could never be patient with this person or that person, will find themselves, often only a few months or a year or so of training down the track, in a situation they know full well, had this happened a year ago, I'd have lost it completely. But right now, I can't. It doesn't make any sense. Why would I get angry? All I want to do is help.
So wherever you're starting today, that's great. But there has to be some, if we want to evolve, there is a process by which we can continually evolve it. What are those practices that those people are engaging in that then people on the podcast can at least begin to explore for themselves that really takes their meditation practice to this whole other level of transformation internally, spiritually?
I think that's really, really important, because a lot of what happens at the beginning, and in general, I think most people, when they think about meditation, are thinking only of these simple techniques for calming the mind. And they work and they're valuable. But real meditation is a lot more than that. We're going to need to look into our mind and see how it's functioning and see why we feel the way we do. And is it necessary? Could we feel differently? One of the things that we can get to with deeper levels of meditation is we can get an insight into the inner workings of our mind. Where are my triggers? Where are the points that I'm vulnerable? Where are these inner time bombs? And can I diffuse them? Personally, like when I very first started going to meditation classes, I'd come from a background of studying Buddhism academically. So I was quite cerebral in my approach and very kind of philosophical and very technical. But I realized studying academically isn't enough. You know, that's like visiting a museum where you see lots of interesting and exotic things, but you don't take anything home. So eventually I thought, I have to find an actual Buddhist, an actual meditator, and try and learn from them. So I went to a class. And the class was so much more basic than I was hoping for. It was really simple. It was just about being kind and loving, like things that now I realize are the most important thing. But from that kind of quite lofty intellectual proud work point of view, I was thinking, oh, this is just very basic. When is he going to talk about Nagarjuna and Chandrakirti? Anyway. And at the end, he just said, you know, with a bit of effort, we can feel close and affectionate to everyone, whoever they are and however they behave. And at that time, I was in quite a conflict situation with someone, another resident in the university campus halls that I was staying in. It was quite a lot of friction. Like, it never came to blows, but it was a bit intense. And in my mind, that person immediately sprang to my mind. And I thought, no, I'm never going to feel close and affectionate to this guy. That's never going to happen. I might stop getting angry, but I'm never going to feel like genuinely close and affectionate. And so I, you know, had a debate with the teacher at the end of the class, as I often did. He got used to that. And he said, well, he was a very smart guy. He said, well, prove me wrong then. Do the meditation. And if it doesn't work, well, then you're right and Buddha's wrong. So thrown down the gauntlet, I go home. I sit on my meditation cushion. I fake the meditation entirely. I'm still angry. And then I realized, well, that doesn't work. I can't fake them. I have to actually try. And so I tried and I tried. And this didn't take long. It was only a few days of doing this. But the meditation was really simple. The meditation was just put yourself in their place. Think about what they've been through. Think about what's happened to them and what's going to happen to them. And so I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about this guy. He's called Damien. And I'm thinking, was he born like this? Like, did he come out of the womb like this? And I'm thinking, I don't think so. I'm sure he's like an innocent little kid like everyone else. And what must have happened to get him from that beautiful baby child to this person that, in my mind at the time, many was so unpleasant and obnoxious and difficult? And I imagined, you know, I don't know, but with a bit of empathy and a bit of imagination, it's like, well, probably some rough stuff, probably some really painful things. That's where the wounds and this kind of defensive behavior reactions have come from. And where is that going? Like, if he's got to this place now and he carries on in this way, isn't the world just going to reflect back to him this kind of negativity and aggression? And that's a whole life for someone that came into the world, probably with a beautiful, innocent mind, just a life of conflict and misery. And I just sat with that. I thought, that's not what I want for him. Now, and I know already from the breathing meditation, inside all of us, inside Damien, there's a calm, there's a stillness, there is a joy within that we can find. And I just sat, found myself on the cushion thinking, I just wish he could find that. I just wish he could find that peace. I just hope he finds happiness. And I'm realizing I'm feeling really close. I'm feeling really warm. And what it really very viscerally felt like, an icy shard in my heart was melting. And I hadn't really appreciated how much damage that resentment or whatever it was doing to me. But in feeling it melt and my heart heal through a simple meditation I'd only been doing for a few days, the problem never really was that person and their behavior, which is not to say that the behavior is okay and we shouldn't oppose disagreeable or unreasonable behavior. But the problem is not them and how they behave, really. Like, our problem is how our mind reacts in that situation.
So in some sense, like, we can get to that place, like you're suggesting there, a lot more peace within our hearts when we realize this is no longer a problem for me. Actually, this is a suffering for them. And if I just move my mind a little bit to that and begin to focus on it in that way, the problem that I'm experiencing begins to dissolve more and more, because the problem is really our resistance to that reality, which is they can't change at the pace we'd like them to change. So what is the practice that they could engage, and what are the steps that somebody want to do that deeper training to begin to resolve those triggers or to resolve those issues within the mind, so that they can develop the confidence that as they go about their day and their life, that they can deal with things in this healthier way?
So there are a range of meditations. There are specific sort of systems of meditation. For example, in our Kadampa Buddhist practice, we have what's called the stages of the path, which gives a spectrum of meditations for us to sit with and contemplate. But the point is, we just learn, the skill is we learn what is the instrument of our mind. How do I elicit from it the most beautiful tones? What is it that moves me? And sometimes it'll be just sort of juxtaposing different examples in our life, thinking of how we were or how someone else that inspires us was, and just realizing that's possible, this is possible. And gradually, what will arise in our heart, not because we've forced it, you know, our heart is responding to our contemplation. We've sat with things, we've considered things, and in response, our heart comes to a conclusion. Like, for example, you know, the meditation on equalizing self and others, the realization, I am not more important. I am not more important. Everyone is as important as I am. Everyone feels their pain as keenly as I feel mine. Everyone longs for happiness just as much as I long for my own. There's this belief, this understanding, we are equal. Everybody matters. Everybody matters. And almost all of us understand that intellectually, would probably agree with it intellectually. But often there's this dissonance between what we know in our head and how our heart is reacting in daily life. And so this kind of meditation is resolving those inner dissonances. And so we sit until our heart is awake to that deep truth. And we realize in our heart, and from the depths of our heart, all of the parts of ourself are agreeing, everybody matters. Everybody's important. And if we just do this exercise, we just start to realize all of the different ways other people are contributing, all of the different things that they're going through. And we realize the struggles and the hopes and the fears. And our heart relaxes, our heart becomes open, and everything starts to smooth over. All of these interactions start to work well. And we are, it will seem like everyone else has changed, but we're the one that's changed. And we've created an environment, internal mental environment, external mental environment, that allows people to just be calm and kind. And we've done that by arriving at an insight, sitting with it, just getting used to it so that it just resides in our mind. Eventually, it's always there. So this is real meditation, real practical meditation. It's life meditation. And I often think that the time we spend on the cushion, it's a little bit like a cricketer or a tennis player where they're practicing, you know, a machine is spitting out the ball and they're practicing their forehand or whatever stroke it is they're doing. That's the practice. But then what would be the real match for us as meditators is life. Can I embody these values, these virtues, these beautiful thoughts and feelings in my life and in my conversations? And that's also meditation.
Thank you so much for that. And I think it's a lovely, I really, actually personally, I could do with going on for the next 2 or 3 hours on this one, because I think we've only just started, but I really appreciate you making the time to do this. And I look forward to us getting back to that at some point in the future again. Thanks a million again, Rabton, for
talking. Thank you, Adam. It's been a joy. Thank you.